Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Welcome to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe. And this is about EU days. It's now about the 11th of March. The 11th of March, 1981. That's a very important day in European history. It's the day of the Kosovo Spring. It was the protest movement which started on the 11th of March, 1981, which was triggered actually by a small event only. It was a small event. It was basically students going to the cantina, to the mensa at the University of Pristina, and somebody was dropping his plate because he thought and he wanted to protest that the food was of very low quality. And understand, it was really of very low quality. And the situation in Yugoslavia already in 81, after the death of Tito, economically was out of control. It was a very desperate economic situation. And obviously, you know, in the poorer segments of the society, in the students, which were relying on state and university prepared food, basically for their accommodation, for their nutrition. Obviously, this kind of low economic situation, the crisis, was resulting in very small and actually very uneatable kind of portions. Quite understandable. But this kind of maybe minor problem, obviously nutrition is a big problem for people, but it is kind of in a bigger context of politics, one wouldn't talk maybe about these issues, but it has led to the Kosovo Spring, because it was then the kind of crystallization point, the protest that students started on that day, and also the heavy-handed suppression of this protest. And it led to a spiral of quite violent protest, actually, under the slogan, "We want a republic." And that is very important in the context of internal Yugoslavian politics. What is a republic? And here it is important to understand that Yugoslavia had 6 republics, but it broke apart in 7 states. And where is the difference? Here was the decision in 1974, when the second Yugoslavian constitution was done, under, of course, also the pressure of economic failure of Yugoslavia, since 65, basically, also since 51, but especially since the economic crisis of Yugoslavia in 65, and the devaluation of the dinar, and the consequent kind of urgent need to get more foreign exchange. There was obviously the need to soften the situation internally, also get everybody on board in a way. And there was this effort to do a new constitution, especially as a response to the so-called Croatian Spring of 71 and the suppression of that it was not the opposition movement. All these movements in Yugoslavia against the unity in that years, they were similar to be understood, like the reform movements in Hungary in 56 and in Czechoslovakia in 68. They were internal reform movements. They were not kind of capitalist, pro-Western, neither orchestrated nor supported nor really inspired. These were all internal socialist kind of variations and deviations. And these famous terms of the communists, always deviationist. They were different forms of socialism. And this was also what the Croatian Spring was about. Obviously, in protest of a very complicated economic situation. Then, in order to appease the internal and soften the internal kind of dissatisfaction with the obvious lack of the economic system to provide basic needs inside Yugoslavia, there was this 74 constitution. And it gave much more rights to all the six republics, but not seven. No, because Kosovo was allowed a certain degree of autonomy, which is widely exaggerated now in the retrospect by some, but it was allowed together also with Vojvodina, that's the northern part of the former Austrian territory, basically, north of the Danube, the territories close to Hungary, or close former Hungary, Austrian-Hungarian Empire. Because never forget, in the time of the declaration of war, the Austrian ambassador, when he left Belgrade, had only to go from the train station 5 minutes to cross the Danube, and he was in Austrian-Hungarian territory. So basically the border was going just north of Belgrade. And that was the situation. And this territory was later then integrated with the breakup of the monarchy. It was integrated in the Yugoslavian kingdom. And this is Vojvodina, basically, with a strong Hungarian minority and even majority in some parts. And also Romanians living there. And it's also, a lot of Schwabians, as the Germans are called, in Yugoslavia, in ex-Yugoslavia. So this was people of German origin from the time of the empire and before even. So that's Vojvodina and that's Kosovo in the south. And these are the two autonomous regions. They were not granted republic status. And you might say, what does this matter too much? It matters actually today still very much, because all these other independence movements inside the Yugoslavian breakup situation in 91-92 were going, of course, not much smoother. That's not to be said in the Bosnian case. But it was a clearer case for the international community to recognize them. Kosovo, unfortunately, also was not recognized when it declared its independence in 91. Remember, I talked about it and I will talk in the future. The 22nd of September 91, Kosovo has declared its independence, but because it was only a region, an autonomous region, it didn't get the international recognition, because the narrative by Belgrade that this is a region and not a republic was somehow convincing, seemingly, in the Western world. And also Kosovo was not well known enough and hardly a big topic, unfortunately. And so it has basically escaped the attention of the international media and of the policymakers, didn't receive the recognition it deserved already back then. And that was obviously then the recipe for genocide and disaster. But that was 91. I'm talking still about 10 years before. I'm talking about the year 81. What exactly happened then? In March 11th was the start of the student protest, and they lasted until the mid of April, basically, for more than a month. And there were several casualties, actually. There's still a memorial plaque at the University of Pristina, but overall there were about 11 people died. About 200 people were long-term imprisoned, over 4,000 were short-term arrested, and over 1,500 were expelled from the university. So significant consequences. And it was, I think, a very acrimonious moment for the whole of the Serbian-Kosovo relation, but also for the whole republics, because they were all afraid that Kosovo will be again put under the similar system like it was until 65. Because in a short version, from 1912, from the conquest of Serbia by Kosovo from the Ottoman Empire until 65, when Rankovic was removed from power, the number two of Tito, who basically established a military regime in Kosovo and suppressed it with a hard fist and total brutality. From 65 onwards, there was the softer phase of Yugoslavia, which lasted to 81. With the death of Tito, obviously, was the question, will there be reprisals again in this kind of Rankovic system? And in fact, it looked like it, and the 2 months were very hard. But in some aspects also, and then there was a compromise reached for the next 6 years until 87. This was an uneasy compromise with a lot of incidents and mutual accusation between the two main ethnic groups of Kosovo. Obviously, the Kosovo Albanians and the Kosovo Serbs, and there are many others as well, Turkish, Bosnians, Korani, etc., living in Kosovo. A small region, but in the center of the Balkans, and so a very thorough mix of all kind of nationalities. But obviously, the Kosovo Serbs, they were about 10% of the population, maybe 12, 13. So when you say 1.5 million Kosovo Albanians, 200,000 Kosovo Serbs, today actually it's about 150,000 to maybe 140,000 Kosovo Serbs, and it's about 1.6 million Kosovo Albanians. Obviously the war and also the immigration has taken a huge toll, because there is not so much population growth compared to 1981, because there's always the myth of this fast-growing population, but obviously also there is an even faster-growing emigration because of lack of opportunities and obviously magnetic opportunities in Germany, Austria, Italy, America, and in other states. So then basically Kosovo entered in a kind of a complicated equilibrium for another 6 years, with a lot of human rights violations, with a lot of heavy-handed suppression, but also with the effort by the Yugoslavian authorities to create a more fairer system, to also find a new balance of power in Pristina and with the Kosovo Albanians. But the communist system had a kind of a small revival phase after 81. But taking the Kosovo Albanians more seriously obviously came at the cost of the ruling elite of Kosovo before, and that was obviously the Kosovo Serbs. So in a very etatist system, in a very socialist system as Yugoslavia was, and even in a shrinking one, even when you basically don't create any new opportunities, yeah, when everything positive in income is always connected towards either state licenses, state support, state jobs, state procurement, everything is the state. And even the opportunity to leave the country is quotarized and limited according to political preferences. Yeah? So what is exactly then the situation? Obviously, when this kind of very etatist system shrinks as well, every job which was given to an Albanian was perceived to be taken from a Serb, because they were the ruling elite in Yugoslavia. And obviously many of them came as well to Kosovo because they got this kind of job opportunities in the police, in the municipalities, in the state apparatus, in a kind of a colonial elite, if you want to say it. Obviously, it was already before living Serbs in Kosovo, but they were, of course, a smaller group. But in this kind of Yugoslavian preference system for Serbs, especially until 65, but more or less long after that one as well, there was, of course, and then basically the administrators, the company bosses, the policemen, the doctors, the university professors, very much were this elite with access to these powerful positions. And that was very often, and mostly, the Kosovo Serbs. It was not the apartheid system which was later established in the 90s. But unofficially, it was clearly this way that the Kosovo Albanians were secondary citizens. Then when you then in 81 and after 81, you make reforms and you want to balance the system a bit and you want to give also Albanians opportunities, Kosovo Albanians opportunities, and you give them also university professor positions, you give them also doctors, access to the public administration and so on, then obviously suddenly it's less opportunities for the Kosovo Serbs. I mean, at least they have perceived it. And in reality, when there is no real private sector, when there is only either farming, immigration, or state sectors and state companies, then obviously in such a kind of a very limited labor market, it's true. There's either this guy with the name Berisha or the other one with the name Katunic or Milinovic. And that's the situation. And then everybody knew who is who, and then every new place for an Albanian was obviously seen as a big crisis for the ones who were significantly parts of them invited as the governing elite into Kosovo from other parts of Serbia, Yugoslavia. And suddenly they were no longer so much the governing elite exclusively, but they had to share as well positions with the supposed lower subhuman Albanians. That was a recipe for disaster. And you see how the Yugoslavian effort even to do things better was bound to fail from the beginning because the whole economic system was so moribund. And then when in 84 the moment came, the Americans gradually reduced the funding system because the onset or the start of Gorbachev was making a new funding for such very complicated allies, not really allies, but shadow proxies like Yugoslavia, really very questionable and less important because the Yugoslavian authorities then really didn't have this kind of balancing power and division power between the East and West anymore. And also the Soviet Union didn't have so much money to spare and also less geostrategic interest in projecting power globally. And so the Yugoslavian house of cards was gradually unfolding. And in an ever-declining economy, then obviously opportunities got even scarcer, meaning jobs got even scarcer, salaries got inflated away. And so it was even more important to be in political power. And then obviously for the, in a way, major parts of the Kosovo Serb population having not really traditional roots in Kosovo, but having been coming from the start in order to have these greater opportunities, they were really very surprised when that was disappearing fast. And that was creating the toxic mix, which then Milosevic exploited. If he did it on purpose completely, or if he was just presented by an opportunity to outperform and outbox everybody else to get full power in Belgrade, and that is a question everybody can have his own opinion. But in between 87 and 89, he tried to box his way on the top, and his kind of Kosovo Serb, how can I say, flash mob is a modern word for that. But they were going everywhere where he wanted on rallies, as long as he organized the train capacity, and they were basically his kind of hooligans, fan club, going everywhere. Because they knew he has changed the side. He opted away from Yugoslavian multiculturalism and ethnic love and bratstvo and jedinstvo into the divisive legitimacy of Serbian nationalism. And they knew that if they want to have power again over the Albanians, he is their instrument. They wanted to have the land without the people, only them as people left. And the land obviously has opportunities when you're just a few there left. And that was already the recipe and the DNA for what happened then a decade later. But it started at this 11th of September, of the 11th of March in 81. And it started at that moment because the Kosovo Albanians have shouted, Republic, Republic, Republic. But was it legitimate? Absolutely, it was legitimate to be in a republic, because Kosovo is not different in any formal context like Slovenia or Macedonia in that sense when it comes to nationhood and claim to nationhood or republic status at that question. But it was not to be. And the crackdown and also then the softening up have led to all the disasters. But, you know, let's not get too sad, because at the end, when it's in these difficult episodes, when I decide to discuss about the Balkans, I tend to get too moribund, and I don't want it. I want to honor the heroes of the day, because what they did is they were protesting for a better living standards. They are completely normal Europeans who want to eat good, who want to live good, who want freedom. And what they didn't want, actually, and that I want to explain as well, it was not the effort to unite and create a greater Albania at that moment. And this whole kind of slur campaign, everything Kosovo does is for greater Albania, is completely untrue and unrealistic. Obviously, you know, a lot of people have this kind of solidarity to their nationhood, which is quite normal, yeah. I mean, that you find everywhere in the world that people who live in different states feel kind of solidarity when they come from a similar people or from the same people. Like the Kosovo Albanians obviously felt very close and are very close to all Albanians, wherever they live. Yeah. But the point is as well that the living standards and the conditions in Albania proper were extremely bad in 1981. And nobody with his clear mind wanted to really join Albania. There was even not a possibility to go there because it was a very close country. There was almost no contact from Albania to anywhere else, because the fact was that Albania was a complete paranoid state, which was completely afraid of Yugoslavia and has fortified its borders and created all these bunkers. And also the living conditions and the political suppression conditions were horrible in Albania. Obviously much worse than in Kosovo. And especially much worse than after the 81 protest, because they had some effects. As I said, the 81 protest, whenever they were suppressed bloodily and brutally, but the political effect of it was a certain opening up of the system towards the Kosovo Albanians, and the idea that any of them wanted immediately to move to Albania is already ridiculous, because very few of them did it. I mean, there is a reason for that. Living standards in Kosovo were obviously very disastrous and very poor compared to Austria or compared to Slovenia as well. Yeah? Even inside Yugoslavia, there were huge prosperity differences. But the real prosperity differential was between Albania and Kosovo in that years, because Yugoslavia was much more open economy. Obviously, it was not a market economy and it was a socialist dictatorship. But there were significant differences towards the Western Bloc, especially because it was more or less a Western proxy ally. And the American ambassador had significant influence on Tito when it came to many important questions, especially when it came to massive human rights abuses, and they were always protested. And additionally, it was like this, that also the situation on the borders in Yugoslavia was much different. People and ideas could enter Yugoslavia, and people and ideas could leave Yugoslavia, and information. So it was always the motto of Tito, if you don't want to live here and are unhappy, then please go, but don't come back. In Albania, I remind you that fleeing from the Republic was capital punishment. And many people were killed in Albania for fleeing. And not just the flight from Albania was punishable by death, but also the whole families and all the relations and all the friends and everybody who was an identifiable contact were put in a horrible system of Albanian penal colonies. in swamp areas they had to live for years. I know many of the families which were grown up then in the very terrible conditions. And once in a while, the black limousine came to pick up people who never returned back again. And the people were not allowed to leave these penal colonies in the swampy mosquito malaria swamps of southern and middle Albania. No, this was, you know, while Albania is very nice today as a tourist location, don't get me wrong, but it was a terrible regime. It was one of the most terrible regimes in the world, by far the most terrible one in Europe. And the Yugoslavian regime, as much as I personally don't like it, and as much as this was also a socialist dictatorship, and it has committed massive human rights, no doubt. But when you can see it in comparison to the Albanian regime, obviously it was much, much softer and more rights and less abuse of power, arbitrary violence, and always also the option to leave. And to leave Yugoslavia towards some other better place. Yeah, that was an option which was never on the table for the Albanians in Albania. So all people who are explaining the Kosovo spring of 81 as a kind of greater Albania nationalistic event, that's pure propaganda. That's pure Serbian propaganda. What was the case? It was turned after, actually it was initiated much more by coincidental living standards, but it was already, it was a very much comparable to the other revolutions, not revolutions, reform movements in the rest of the Soviet bloc and in the communist world and in Yugoslavia, where the intellectuals wanted to have a certain kind of different socialism. It was also not that these were freedom fighters in the sense of conservative or liberal or libertarian thinkers or whatever. No, these were basically internal division and deviationists, as this famous term goes, and people who wanted a softer socialism, a kind of social democratic system like in Austria or in other countries at that stage. This was their dreams and this was their visions, and not any kind of nationalistic or anti-Serb agenda. It was just outrageous living standards and a quest for an opportunity for a more softer, more human socialism. And that was, I think, what many of these reform movements were about. And that they were brutally crashed then by the Serbian and by the Yugoslavian authorities is also very much because related to the fact that there were so many of these movements all over Yugoslavia, because nobody was really happy because it was economically a disaster. And this has to be in the front in all the analysis. It was even less about the political demands, like a republic obviously was in the front and that was the slogan. But better living standards and more opportunities would have already sufficed to quell this reform movement. But a very unstable and fragile Yugoslavian leadership after the death of their hero Tito in 1918 and 80, and then obviously just half a year later or 7 months later, next spring, was coming the Kosovo spring. And I prefer also to call it spring. I'm in favor of the word spring in that way, because we often tend to repeat the Serbian narratives about rebellion, nationalists, and all these kind of words with negative connotation. But it is the Croatian spring. There was also the Serbian spring later in 91, and there is the Kosovo spring in 81, and it was an epoch-changing thing. And it is very important to understand it right, and also understand the actually efforts by the Yugoslavian leadership, not just to quell it, but also to accommodate the Kosovo Albanians afterwards. But that obviously led to debalancing the whole system of Serbian colonialism. Call it that way, call it a different way. I call it Serbian colonialism. And it was basically the system, the ruling elite of Serbia, of Kosovo, which was implanted by Serbia, Yugoslavia in Kosovo. Not all of them, you know, there was also autochthon Serbs, no doubt, yeah. But many of them were coming with superior education and the claim to the best jobs. And they thought, oh, one moment, what's going on? We should share all these opportunities. And there are anyhow not so many opportunities around. So this will not go out in our favor. And that led to this toxic mix. And then you can add also religious narratives and this kind of power-hungry Milosevic and so on. And the whole system was bent to build up for a big disaster, which ultimately happened. And the West, again, did very little when the West had the opportunity in 91. But the lack of information and the lack of leadership led to us trying to avoid taking decisions. And then we had to take much harder decisions in 98 and in 99, especially when finally the point came that the intervention was inevitable because of the very stubborn position of Milosevic to claim the whole of Kosovo without Albanians and implement that by force. And that was, of course, a genocide, and the West had to intervene then. But again, I say, with better policy already at the end of the 80s and beginning of the 90s, maybe many of the people could still be alive. But it was not to be, and now what remains is to celebrate the heroes of the Kosovo Spring, talk positively and think positively about them. They have done nothing wrong. They have fought for freedom and better conditions. They were decent Europeans, and I think they have to be deserved to be kept in good memory by all Europeans. So the 11th of March, as day for the Kosovo Spring, I think it's important that all Europeans think about the good students who led this Kosovo Spring in the year 81, and also and that actually then there was a phase of stability which worked relatively fine for some and in Kosovo, and it was too avoidable, and the whole breakdown of 87 to 89. But again, you know, we were badly prepared, and it led to a big disaster. So next time, better preparation, dear listeners. So thanks for your attention. Thanks for listening. And I will be back soon with more on European history and European politics and how to make peace and keep peace in Europe. Please invite Kosovo to NATO, to the EU candidate status, and also make sure that Kosovo joins the European Union in 2029. So all this will be in museum and in podcasts, and we have solved the Kosovo conflict and situation once and for all, once Kosovo is in NATO and in the European Union, and let's get it done. We have so many years lost, so many crises. I think it's enough now. We need peace and prosperity based on EU and NATO membership of the Republic of Kosovo. Thanks a lot for listening.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.